Jayama. It's a day actually of deep gratitude and silence. And to speak sometimes seems like a blasphemy. But since it's a celebration actually. And just to share a few words, few thoughts. Matri Mandir has been the soul of Auroville, we all know. Mother has spoken about it. And long back, I don't remember when, but I had voiced it here a few years back, that I wish Sri Aurobindo's relics came here, because it was just a feeling, a personal feeling, that that is the soul and we need to establish the divine presence. They are always together in the heart, very close to each other. And so the soul and all its struggle, that's how I look at the journey of Auroville, is the soul of Auroville expressing itself, having been established finally with the near completion of Matri Mandir. And then the coming of the divine presence, because they are linked to each other like the calf and the cow. So wherever the calf goes, the cow follows. So that's how I look at it. And what better place than Savitri Bhavan? Savitri, as we know, has the double presence of Sri Aurobindo and the mother together. It's written by Sri Aurobindo, and though his story is embedded in it, but primarily it is the mother's story. Mother is in the forefront as Savitri. All their experiences are contained in Savitri. And then at the climax, Shraddhavan, whose name itself I feel is a symbol. What draws the divine presence is Shraddha. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. So it's very beautifully coordinated. And the other day, one of the letters of Shraddhavan, a handwritten note, which I would like that people should be aware exactly. She wanted the relics at some point, aspired for the relics, and Kavitanjali just found it and sent me. She was all very excited. And the lotus, which is a drawing of the mother. So everything sometimes seems to just go fit, slide beautifully into each other. And for us personally also, yesterday it just happened, and nothing is a coincidence, that the 2.5-year-old cycle of essays on the Gita got over. So it all is flowing so smoothly, and when things happen like that, of course there are struggles, there are challenges. That's what life is. And through all this, the evolution and the divine presence and the divine kingdom takes place. So this is the backdrop, and the very brief aspect of it is the relics. I had quite some time back, had a little chit-chat here and there about coming of relics, and people thought it's a religion. Nobody here, but well, in the Auroville context. Some people thought it's a religion, some thought all kinds of things. That's not so important. But basically, if you look at it, there are two conceptions of life vis-a-vis the divine reality. One is they are disconnected from each other, which has led to the extreme of Mayavad. That life, body, everything is disconnected from that supreme reality. And if at all this has a purpose, it is only to ultimately help us find that. So there are two variations in it. One is totally disconnected. It's going on as some aghatan ghatan patiyasi. Or else life is a preparation for the afterlife, for the beyond, after which this loses its relevance. And that has been a thought which humanity has carried, expressed. And when we look at it from that thought point of view, there are people who would say samadhi, relics, all this has no meaning or little meaning except as a remembrance. I met people who say, oh, photographs are meant for remembrance. And these are very good for remembrance, because in Buddhism, people keep those sometimes they keep the asthis or stupas, and they say it's for remembrance. Relics are not for remembrance. Remembrance is an inner process we should go on all the time. If we need some external object or a picture for remembrance, we are very far from true spiritual life. So relics, the profound truth behind relics, and we shouldn't forget that the mother herself had started giving the relics. She was not giving them so that people can remember Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So the other aspect, other way of looking at the whole aspect of relics is comes from the truth that whole creation is a single extension, Chatushpad Brahman. The deepest divine reality percolates into the stuff of matter, into its very cells, in each atom of existence. As the mother says in one of her prayers, living within the heart of each atom, I kindle the fire that never goes out. So this is the other way of looking at the whole truth. And so when we use the word, somebody had reminded me about, and this is relevant to Aurobindo also, when some upheavals were going on within the ashram context and people were trying to dissociate ashram and the divine presence inside. Human mind is full of naughty things. So there is a letter where the mother says the ashram is the body of Sri Aurobindo. Now, what do you say to that? And it's right in tune with our deepest spiritual understanding that the physical is not something to be discarded. It's an extension, Chatushpad Brahman, the most external, the most outward. Otherwise, the whole theory of Gita and so much of Vedic lore will just fall flat. It's an extension. Extension of what? Extension of what is within. That's why in India, though people do give the body to fire, but there has been the tradition that certain Mahatmas, their bodies are not given to fire, but they are put in Samadhi. Because it's not just for reverence. This is the most foolish way of looking at it, that it's for reverence. So it's not for reverence. Reverence, you don't need to do this. It's because the house that inhabited grows one with the householder. This line from Savitri. The house and the householder grow one. So the house, the bodily house that inhabited the consciousness of Sri Aurobindo, that held the presence of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, I would say, it's not just a body, one of the body. It's a body which held the immortal and therefore shared its substance, shared its consciousness. And with Sri Aurobindo and the mother, because it's about the supramental, therefore it shared the highest possibility of the body was somewhere trickling down right into the very cells. And I think most of us know when Sri Aurobindo physically withdrew on 5th December and they had to give a message in the newspaper. So the initial note was that the mortal remains of Sri Aurobindo would be interred in the Samadhi. Thank God. And that was the way people sent the note to the mother. And we know that mother took a red pen, cut it, and she wrote only one sentence. There is nothing mortal about Sri Aurobindo. Each cell of his body held the immortal flame. There is nothing mortal about Sri Aurobindo. Each cell of his body held the immortal flame. And when we read his poems, one can see that. Even in Savitri, book 3, canto 4, where he describes each cell was apotheosized. What the way Sri Aurobindo uses the words is amazing. Now they are no more my cells. They are completely the divine, consumed by the divine. Right way far into the process of transformation, which is a different subject, so I'll not speak about it. They are not cells. They are powerhouses of the supramental consciousness, of the supramental power which is working in creation. And that's why the mother took so much care. The relics were not given just like that. And I have a very recent event when first time they went to Bengal after much request by Pradyodha and others. Mother said, Bengal has rejected Sri Aurobindo. If the relics go, there must be a state welcome. So there was a state welcome in honor of the relics. Proper state welcome with topon ki salami, as they say. But it stands true that Bengal at one point of time rejected Sri Aurobindo. See, after many, many decades, suddenly we see a change of scene taking place. So these are real events which collate with each other. First time when we went to US, our friend Larry was there, and I was used to Indian scenario of taking relics. So when I went there, and some of us were there, three of us were there. So we thought, they will be like, you know, we were having this conception, many people, and you know, nobody is there, and there is one person who has come to drive us all the way to. So we were very surprised, because this is not how we were used to looking at how the relics would go. This was not a ceremony. Who else would you welcome other than the Lord? Who else will one welcome? Who else is worth welcoming with all your arms open to embrace? So relics are a power. They are not just a token, memento, or remembrance. They are a power. And this is not just our power, our divine power, but the power of transformation. I have seen life change. I have seen many, many things. Just two of the many experiences, I would say. One, we all know that relics went to Ayodhya, and what followed was the demolition of the Babri Masjid. Relics went to Patiala, and within 15 days, the entire band of 700 plus that time, the Khalistani movement terrorists, they surrendered. It was like finishing of that movement after that. And many places I have seen, and I remember when Bangalore, we were carrying the relics from here, and when they were being established. So one of our my close friends, now he is no more, Raj Vasisht, he told me, you know, if fire has come. I said, yes, I know. I hope we are able to receive and hold it. And sure enough, the center went through. What a massive change. So relics are not just remembrance that, okay, I'll pay my some homage to Sri Aurobindo. The only homage we can pay is to be a living example of his teaching, which is way more difficult. But their power, and to receive that, we must be able to give ourselves that the best way. We have two wonderful stories, many stories in mythology about the power of relics. It's not used as relics. So one of them is the well-known Shiva Dhanush, Pinak. So everybody has been called to lift it and put the string on the bow. Whoever does it, he will marry Janaki. And everybody in the Sabha is saying, what a cruel king. Actually, Janaki, as a 5-year-old, Mata Sita had lifted it. So king knew that only her partner is capable of doing it, whoever is the partner. And everybody is saying, "Arey, why has he chosen some asura? Somebody will come and take it. So take her." So all of them come, and nobody is able to even lift it. Dashanan with all his bhujabal, he's not able to. He could lift Kailash, just imagine. But he couldn't lift the pinak which has been used by Shiva. And here comes Rama, bows down in utter humility, and the bow is stringed. And it has repercussions so vast that Parshuram comes all the way, that who could do this? There are forces which are guardians. We don't understand it. We may not see with our naked eyes. About the Samadhi, for example, Mother spoke of beings who come at night to just clean the atmosphere of the human things which are thrown. So wherever these, like we used to grow up with this idea of Hanuman Katha, that wherever there is Ram Katha going on, Hanuman Ji is present. So we were taught as a child, don't get up from the place where you are doing Ram Katha and walk away, because under any pressure, Hanuman Ji will come and sit. And with Hanuman Ji around, you know what he is going to do. So we should understand what it means. It's not just a memento. It's not just a remembrance. It's a serious thing. It's like handling the most powerful content upon earth. So this is what I'll say. I've seen places one has to, And the only thing that really helps when one comes in the presence of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, like a child and with utter humility and surrender. So when that is there, it works. Another story from Shiv Puran, we know that what does, when all the Prajapati, all this is happening, Mata Sita, Sati has been consumed by the Yajna Vedi of her own choice. What does Shiva do? He doesn't do Tandav or go to, he simply takes a lock of his hair and throws it. And the most powerful Rudra ever born or manifested upon earth is Veerbhadra from the locks of Shiva. If such be the touch of Shiva, can we imagine the touch of Sri Aurobindo, the lock of his hair? And this is not an ordinary thing. I mean, this is not a, I mean, I don't have words, because since I mentioned about Shiva, just a story of the extraordinary power that Sri Aurobindo not only manifested but continues to manifest upon earth. So when there was a time, mother recounts this story, that Shiva came, the gods used to come to mother and Sri Aurobindo when they were meditating. There are so many stories, wonderful stories. So at one point of time when Shiva came and he asked, what can I do? Now, the only god who agreed to participate on earth in an earthly body was Krishna. So Shiva said, I won't join an earthly body, but I will help. What shall I do? And mother spoke about destroying the physical ego. All other planes it had gone. We'll see this description in Record of Yoga, Annamay Kosha and the ego there, and the mother's experience of 1960 when the physical ego was smashed for the supermind to descend into the physical body. But that apart, so she said, well, the physical ego needs to go. This is 1926, before that, just little before that. And she says that he started giving his gift, and she felt that all her body cells are getting scattered all over. And then she goes and tells Sri Aurobindo that something very funny is happening to me. And Sri Aurobindo saw, and he says, not yet, not yet. This is not the time. Now, something which Shiva had granted, that's how she puts it very passingly. And everything came back intact. And then she writes very mildly. She said, well, but Shiva had granted and the process had begun, but the whole thing came back, because Sri Aurobindo, all that he said was, not yet. So we can imagine what is that power. And of course, Sri Aurobindo's humility and mother's humility is beyond what we can imagine. But that's the only thing we can learn a little bit from them, because that opens the gate that we are in the presence of whom. That's the only thing worth remembering, as she has inscribed on the Samadhi. We are not in the presence of relics. People call it shrine, relics. I don't know, there's some words people have to use. But we are in the presence of whom. And if you just remember that it's not just some piece of hair or strand of hair and this, how, and we know how the relics were to be enshrined, the whole process. Mother would say, put it under first gold, then silver, then sandalwood, then teak, rosewood, then teak wood. That's the way, because it's tremendous power. And this is the way. Now we are so, what shall I say, fortunate is not the word. It's like Auroville found its soul with the Matri Mandir, and Auroville found the divine presence concretely manifested in physical matter with the enshrinement of the relics here, and all in such a harmonious way, all the events flowing into each other. So all that we can do is maybe a few moments of gratitude before we proceed with whatever else, just a few moments of gratitude. May we never forget, even for a moment, all we owe to Thee. Thank you.